I think the challenge that the Biden administration faces is that the world has changed and the U.S. has changed.
And that is one of the challenges for the new U.S. president. This is Thursday, January 28th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, the new U.S. Secretary of State tells his staff they have their work cut out for them. New orders from the president pushing for racial equity for Asian Americans and others. Indonesia battles over a million cases of COVID. That and more on today's VOA Asia. As the 46th president of the United States continues to settle into his Oval Office, he faces a slew of difficult problems, not the least of which is how to deal with what many consider to be a loss of trust among allies at a number of international hotspots. Today, we at VOA Asia continue our examination of what lies ahead for Joe Biden when it comes to relations with Asian nations. We examine how the U.S. might deal with North Korea with the help of the VOA Korea Service. We've listened to their Washington Talk TV program as they spoke with two experts on North Korea, William Newcomb, a former member of the U.N. Sanctions Committee on North Korea, and Scott Snyder, the director of U.S. Korea Policy at the American Foreign Relations Association. It is Snyder's prediction that President Biden will seek to turn back the clock when it comes to North Korea.
We can see evidence of that in the return to the climate change agreement and U.S. rejoining WHO. But I think the challenge that the Biden administration faces is that the world has changed and the U.S. has changed. And so I think the question is, how will the U.S. efforts to provide global leadership be greeted or challenged by the world? And then can the U.S. sustain international leadership in the face of enormous domestic challenges?
A major part of U.S. relations with North Korea has been what is termed top-down, referring to the summit meetings between President Trump and DPRK leader Kim Jong-un. William Newcomb sees Biden's policy as at least starting off in a different way.
I think we're going to see more bottom-up, very little top-down. But at the same time, should lower-level talks create an opportunity for potential breakthroughs, I wouldn't rule out President Biden stepping in at an appropriate time. But I think you would have to have some deals pretty soundly in place before he made that kind of political commitment.
Newcomb says the U.S. should expand its North Korea focus beyond that of denuclearization.
I certainly would hope that they not only look at what the Trump administration did, but they would also go back as far as the agreed framework and take an unflinching look at the sequence of policy failures that have dogged our efforts to get North Korea to give up its nuclear weapons, ballistic missiles. And, you know, we really need to broaden our targets. They have pretty sophisticated chemical weapons perfected in Syria in actual use. They have they pose a terrific cyber threat and do a lot of cyber thefts. And we have the human rights issues, too. So we have a lot more things to address than just what has been the sole focus of all these past years.
President Biden's Secretary of State Tony Blinken has said he feels the situation between the United States and North Korea has worsened. Snyder agrees.
Yeah, I think it's definitely the case that it's gotten worse. We saw the tests from 2017, but since then we see just this year North Korea's expression of intent to continue in developing the submarine-launched ballistic missile capability. We see an emphasis on developing tactical nuclear weapons, possibly for battlefield use. And the big issue, I think, that the Biden administration faces is whether or not Kim Jong-un and North Korea are going to redirect a shift in intentions. We saw that summitry was successful inducing some measure of restraint in expressed intent by North Korea. But now North Korea has gone back to this formulation of hostile policy, and they've expressed that that hostile policy is unending. And so in the context of that formulation with regards to perceptions of U.S. intent, it raises some big questions about what North Korea's intent is going to be going forward.
Newcomb agrees and adds there is even more cause for concern.
We have a threat of renewed proliferation. You have to recall that North Korea committed the worst acts of proliferation ever when it built the nuclear reactor in Syria that Israel destroyed. It also was helping Libya when Gaddafi had his nuclear program going on. And so the concern now is, will it resume this kind of activity? Would it even entertain proliferation to non-state actors, which has always been, I think, a very grave concern when looking at the North Korean threat. It's not just missiles flying toward U.S. possessions or the U.S. mainland. It's a much bigger issue than that.
So what can be done? Sanctions, says Newcomb, but not the way they have so far been applied.
Sanctions need to be, in my view, more fully enforced. And they never really were. We have a tool that we have failed to utilize to its maximum effect. And if you look at more recent reports by the panel of experts, they have documented exhaustively a number of violations, and they have named and shamed the people that did it. But what consequences have there been? Probably no more than a New York City parking ticket issued to a diplomat.
Our thank you to the VOA Korea Service for contributing to this series of reports. Please join us tomorrow for an examination of President Biden and Southeast Asia. This is VOA Asia. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken arrived for his first day of work Wednesday, reminding his department that they have their work cut out for them, but they will succeed by rebuilding trust and transparency.
The world is watching us intently right now. They want to know if we can heal our nation. They want to see whether we will lead with the power of our example, if we'll put a premium on diplomacy with our allies and partners to meet the great challenges of our time. So we've got our work cut out for us. But I am confident we will succeed. The United States has enormous sources of strength. We're going to build upon them. America's values are noble and powerful. And we will recommit to them. And America's leadership is needed around the world, and we'll provide it, because the world is far more likely to solve problems and meet challenges when the United States is there. America, at its best, still has a greater capacity than any other nation on earth to mobilize others for the better.
U.S. senators voted 78-22 to approve Blinken, a longtime Biden confidant, as the nation's 71st Secretary of State, succeeding Mike Pompeo. The position is the most senior cabinet position, with the secretary fourth in the line of presidential succession. Blinken, who is 58, served as Deputy Secretary of State and Deputy National Security Advisor during the Obama administration. We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. President Joe Biden Tuesday signed a series of executive orders that the White House says will advance racial equity for Americans who have been underserved and left behind. Biden's moves disavow racism and xenophobia, including of the type directed at Asian Americans following the rise of the coronavirus pandemic. White House correspondent Patsy Wiedekaswara has the story.
The quest for racial justice has been front and center in the U.S. since the death of George Floyd in police custody last May.
It was the knee on the neck of justice, and it wouldn't be forgotten. It stirred the conscience and of tens of millions of Americans. And in my view, it marked a turning point in this country's attitude toward racial justice.
On Tuesday, President Joe Biden signed four executive orders that the White House says will advance racial equity for Americans who have been underserved and left behind.
These aren't feel-good policies. The evidence is clear. Investing in equity is good for economic growth, and it creates jobs for all Americans.
Biden's actions reversed several Trump administration policies. He directed agencies to strengthen anti-discrimination laws on federal housing and end the Justice Department's use of private prisons, which activists say compound racial disparities. While the rate of black imprisonment has decreased in recent years, it is still more than five times the rate of white incarceration.
If you have a for-profit system that then pays people based upon the number of people in it, they're going to want to put more and more people in it. And so the incentives are all wrong in terms of being able to deal with the better societal objectives of public safety and the rehabilitation of members of our society.
Biden is also recommitting the U.S. government to better consultation with the nation's 574 federally recognized Native American tribes. And he wants to combat discrimination against Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders that intensified in the early days of the pandemic.
People who look Asian, people who look Chinese are being identified as having the virus.
Biden's push for equity, distributing resources with focus on the needs of minorities, is criticized by conservatives who say true equality means giving everyone the same resources no matter who they are.
This definition of equity by the left is unequal treatment in order to obtain equal outcomes. That is not who we are. That is what Marxism pretends to do to obtain equal outcomes. We do not have equal outcomes. We allow people to flourish.
Biden's racial equity agenda seeks to deliver for people who helped him win the White House. Black voters make up 11% of the electorate in 2020, and more than 90% of them voted for Biden. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
Indonesia officially surpassed 1 million coronavirus cases Tuesday, a grim milestone for the Southeast Asian nation that has struggled since last March to get the COVID-19 pandemic under control. Emily Wither reports.
It's a familiar situation across the world, but no less shocking. In Indonesia, the hospitals are full of patients gasping for breath. And graves are being hastily dug. The Southeast Asian nation officially passing a grim milestone Tuesday, 1 million coronavirus cases. The world's fourth most populous country has struggled since last March to get the COVID-19 pandemic under control. Deaths from the respiratory disease now total 28,468. Those numbers are among the highest across Asia. Health experts believe the true spread of the disease could be three times higher. West Java has been facing some of the highest infection rates across the country. Reuters spoke to residents in Bogor, a city south of Jakarta on Java Island.
This situation is very worrying. Maybe it's the lack of public awareness, but in my opinion, people just don't want to know about the situation, or they don't care about it. Things like wearing masks and washing hands should be mandatory. But even in big cities, they don't consider it an obligation.
If we believe that COVID will attack us, it will definitely attack us. But if we are sure that COVID will not attack us and we surrender to God, we will definitely not get it.
The Indonesian government started a mass vaccination campaign and tightened movement restrictions earlier this month. It can't come soon enough as hospitals come under mounting strain. Dozens of COVID-19 patients have reportedly been turned away due to a lack of beds and ventilators.
Correspondent Emily Wither reporting. We continue on VOA Asia. Virtual patients are stepping in for real ones and allowing nursing students to continue their training during the pandemic. Tina Trin reports.
Do you ever get headaches?
Yeah, I get them a lot when I'm studying.
Tina Jones is a virtual patient, and you're her nurse. And to be a good one, you must ask the right questions, just like in the real world.
You would actually have to start the conversation.
David Messias is describing Shadow Health, a virtual training simulation for nurses and healthcare professionals. Recently acquired by health science publisher Elsevier, Shadow Health relies largely on what nurses in training say or write to patients. Lori Rilko teaches nursing students at George Washington University and says Shadow Health provides a safe environment in which students can practice and build their confidence.
They get to practice what questions to ask and how to ask it to get the information that's so crucial to make that diagnosis.
Shadow Health's technology lets students safely continue their education during the pandemic. Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
Thank you for being with us. Our thank you to our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team. They include Amy Heibel, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Stay healthy and enjoy the day ahead.